And you're tuned to listener-sponsored, commercial-free, community radio WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. I'm Michael G. Haskins, signing off for the night. Mike Levine's engineer for this program, Expert Witness Show. He'll be back next Tuesday at 7 p.m. Coming up at 8 o'clock, Off the Hook with Emmanuel Goldstein. Arab Voices, Crescent Rising with Barbara Nimri Aziz at 9 p.m. City in Exile at 10 o'clock. Janet Coleman is your host. And Poisoned Arts at 10:48 p.m. Off the Hook, coming up straight away.
India and Pakistan have now detonated 11 atomic and hydrogen bombs. What's behind this nuclear confrontation? And what about the United States and China? This is Dr. Michio Kaku. Join us this Thursday, June 18th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Martin Luther King Jr. Labor Center. That's 310 West 43rd Street between 8th and 9th Avenues. Speakers include Dilip Hero, author of A Dictionary of the Middle East and Inside India Today. Also representatives from India and Pakistan and myself. For more information, please call 212-330-8277. That's 212-330-8277. Don't miss it.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI in New York. We're broadcasting from yet another new studio. And this is the final stop, I think, on our journey. It's 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night. Time for Off the Hook.
Tonight.
Au contraire, there is a guest list tonight. We have a guest here at Off the Hook, and we'll be speaking with him in just a couple of moments. But first, the news. Well, there is no real new news as far as the Kevin Mitnick film goes. We told you about this last time, that there's a film being made now by Miramax Films based on the book, if you want to call it that, the book Takedown, which spread all kinds of mistruths. Unless, of course, I guess what Satomo Shiromura had for dinner was important. I think they got that part right. But all the things involving Kevin Mitnick, they kind of got wrong. Now they're going to make a film based on that with his name. And we're trying to get a copy of the script. We're trying to demonstrate against this when it starts filming in North Carolina next month. And we're going to be giving you lots more information as we get it. If you're able to get more information, please pass it on to us, as we'd sure like to do something about this. The movement to get Kevin released, he's been in prison now for over 3 years without a trial. The movement just keeps getting bigger and bigger. Stickers are showing up everywhere, and people are talking about all kinds of amazing things, which hopefully will happen at some point. Well, we have... I guess the best thing to do is just to get some factual information out there. And keep in mind, we're in a brand new studio, a second brand new studio. We went to our interim studio 2 weeks ago, and now we're in what I believe is the final one, because this is a really nice one, so I hope we stay here. And things seem to actually be working. I probably just jinxed it by saying that. So as soon as I figure out where the phone is, we're going to call a Bell Atlantic operator. Oh, okay, there we go. We're going to call a Bell Atlantic information operator and find out just what the number for Miramax is in New York. Waiting for the voice of James Earl Jones. It's not going to happen, is it? Is anyone there on the phone? Anyone? Nobody. Okay, well, let's try this then. Apparently what's happened is, I would bet that 411 is somehow blocked on our phone system. So let's try the backup of 555-1212. Here we go. Hi, Manhattan. I'm looking for the number for Miramax Films, please.
Sure, one moment.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Miramax Films. There's actually three listings, one on Beach, Greenwich, and Hudson.
Is there any difference in the listings? Are they all the same?
No, they all say the same thing.
Okay. If you give us what looks like the biggest one, maybe one ending in two zeros or something.
One on Beach. It's 625-5000.
Yeah, that sounds pretty corporate. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. There we have it. 212-625-5000, number for Miramax Films. If you want to express your satisfaction with the fact that a Kevin Mitnick film is being made, that it's totally based on fantasy, or maybe you want to express some other sentiments, it's all up to you. That number once again, 212-625-5000. We'll be calling them tomorrow during business hours. All kinds of pages are getting hacked, and people are getting words out in all kinds of different ways. Now, some of them are good, and some of them are kind of not so good, because what you have to understand is that if you're going to go around talking about this case, you really want to be somewhat based in reality. You want to get the facts straight, and you don't want to do something that is seen as a threat, much like the Yahoo hack of late last year, where people kind of posted a threatening message saying, if Kevin Mitnick does not get out, we're going to take down the internet, things like that. You know, it doesn't look that good for the cause when people react like that. We understand, you know, people get upset, people get frustrated, but it's just not good for the cause. As an example, someone sent us a piece of email about this. To off the hook, I spread news and information about Kevin Mitnick almost daily, getting the word out about the stupidity of the whole thing, but there are lots of people spreading the wrong info and hurting Kevin's case. An incident happened to me today on a system that I help admin. Someone created an account, Micnick. They didn't even spell the name right. Yeah, we allow the public to create provisional accounts. And he posted the following on our message board in the name of Kevin Micnick. Free Kevin. Kevin Micnick is one of many hackers that is still being held by the FBI for merely possessing a red box. This is quite unfair for us hackers in DDDo. Well, number one, there's no red box involved in here, and number two, it's MITNICK. And, well, you can just pretty much go on from there. The best thing to do, is have some authoritative sources. And right now, the best authoritative source that I believe that we can point to is the official Kevin Micnick site, which is www.kevinmicnick.com. And that's one word, KevinMicnick.com. That's the authoritative source for information, various bits of propaganda that the government sends Kevin's way. They get posted on that website as well. In fact, the webmaster's here for that site. Come on up to the microphone. Tell us what's new on the Kevin Micnick website. Bear in mind, though, I have no idea where these mics come up, so I'm just going to turn them all on and figure out which ones shouldn't be on. Okay, Phil, you there?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, and I'm not sure where I'm hearing you from. But tell us, you've been doing the web updates now for at least, I guess, a month or so, right?
Yeah, we've tried to revamp the site quite a bit because there's a lot of information. Now with the movie coming out, there's going to be even a lot more. Some of the good things about the site now is it's a little bit more proactive. You can actually go to the site and do some things. If you go to, you know, www.kevinmicnick.com, you can go to the What You Can Do section, and there's lots of neat things like write to your congressman, write to your senator, the major newspapers, the major television stations, the major websites, all the way down to donating to his defense fund, which definitely needs some help.
And, of course, we have the virtual bumper stickers that are showing up all over the net. They look exactly like the ones that are showing up all over cars throughout the world. And if you copy those virtual bumper stickers, you'll also copy the link to that website. So what we'd like to see is, you know, and feel free to ask your provider to put this on their main site as well. You see a free Kevin sticker, you click on that, and right away you go to www.kevinmicnick.com. We can put these everywhere, on every web page on the net. You know, CNN.com can put it on their web page if they wanted to. Of course, they probably don't. But we should be getting it to as many different people as possible. The reason being, the more people that know about this, the more pressure there is. Why do you think they sent that nanny back to England today? You know, you remember the whole case where she was accused of killing this kid and she was found guilty and everybody was up in arms about it because they didn't think she really did it. It was because of the public outcry that she wasn't put in prison and she was sent home. It's because of public outcry Bernie S. was released as well. So the public definitely does have some sort of a say in it, despite what they may tell you. They may say that the public has absolutely no input and it's up to the judges and juries and things like that. It's nonsense. A strong public reaction will most definitely have an effect. That's why getting the word out is the most important thing we can do. So, yeah, getting the word out in the proper way. Now, there was a hacked web page somewhere, some college someplace. The address was, thanks, Phil. The address was www.bw.edu. That happened sometime last week. And basically, someone sent this to us. It just says, Free Kevin. Kevin Micnick remains in federal custody nearly 3 years after his arrest on hacking charges. Well, actually, it's more than 3 years. 3 years in February. Mr. Micnick has been held without bail in the Los Angeles Metropolitan Detention Center since his arrest in Raleigh, North Carolina on February 15, 1995. He was indicted in 1996 on 25 counts of computer crimes, including possession of unauthorized access devices, computer fraud, causing damage to computers, wire fraud, and interception of wire or electronic communications. Now, this causing damage, I have no idea what that's all about, and that's something that I don't think really has been backed up in any substantial way. The federal government is apparently using the Micnick case to instill fear in the minds of computer users and to discourage activities they consider to be hacking. The government apparently wishes to encourage those individuals who have merely been accused of hacking-related offenses to plead guilty rather than face lengthy pretrial detention without the benefit of bail. This madness must stop. More people must be made aware of the fact that if there were no hackers breaking into systems just for the hell of it, foreign governments would easily be passing through our military computer security systems due to the fact that when someone hacks a system, they find the bug and patch it. Unfortunately, people like this are being arrested and not hired by large businesses and government agencies to help keep our system secure. The term hacker has come to mean someone who is bent on destroying the important files and data of others. This is absolutely not so. People like this are not only not hackers, but are rejected by the hacker community. Destroying data is one thing. Trying to spread an important message is another. To find out what you can do for Kevin Mitnick, please visit the 2600 website, and that website will be linking to the Kevin Mitnick website. This page was not hacked by anyone affiliated with 2600 in any way. I am using their page only as a reference to get more information. The original page was not harmed. You can reach it by clicking here. Isn't that nice? The person hacked the page and put a little button for the original page, so you could go right back to it if you needed to. I'm merely here to help spread a message, not to destroy. Signed, KKR. And that's an example of you know, getting the word out in an intelligent way. So if you're going to get the word out in unconventional ways, such as hacking web pages, think about how you want to send the message. Okay, speaking about weird messages, let's see what we have here. Where should we go first? Okay, here's a letter. Recently I heard that the New York Transit people wanted to add an EasyPass type system to subway stations. This came after many people complained that the MetroCard's swipe-and-go system didn't always work. What they proposed to do was have a smaller card-like device that will read and then debit your account as you pass through a gate. Just think how much easier your big brother could track you around the city. Now they could just put up hidden gates around the city and ping your card, just like how they catch speeders on New York roads with EasyPass. I was wondering if you heard anything more. Signed, Nobody Knows. Well, nobody around here knows about that, and that's I don't think that's something that they could keep secret for very long if they were actually doing something like this. It's not a good idea. It's not something that I would embrace, and I don't think very many people that have intelligence would embrace a system like that that opens up all kinds of privacy violations. It's not likely. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be keeping an eye out for it. It's certainly possible. It just doesn't seem very likely, especially after putting all this money into the MetroCard system. So I'd have to say probably this isn't going to happen. Not anytime soon, anyway. Although, with the lunatic we have in office now, I gotta say, anything is possible. I mean, the latest thing, you know, the guy wants to build a bomb shelter now for himself and his aides in the World Trade Center because I guess he knows something's coming, you know? He knows some kind of Holocaust is coming where he's going to have to survive and order the rest of us to stop squeegeeing windshields or whatever it is that happens to be the mandate of the times. So, yeah, okay, anything's possible. That's pretty much where we should leave that. Here's a letter. Just finished the May 26th off the hook, and yes, it is remarkable that people will buy products with corporate logos and, in effect, advertise for free. Wait a minute. Don't you guys sell T-shirts with your logo? Okay, I'll continue to wear mine, but only because you gave it to me. Well, first of all, I don't remember giving anything to this person. And second of all, if you can't see the difference between wearing a hacker T-shirt and wearing something that's made by a multinational corporate entity that doesn't really care about you at all in any way, shape, or form, and that has sweatshops in foreign countries. I mean, at least our sweatshops are right here at home. That's the important thing to remember. So, yeah, there's a slight difference there, I think. All right, finally, and this is something that's going to get some people's blood boiling, a computer security firm is so certain of its security prowess that it is offering to protect its customers with the first ever computer hacker insurance. That's right, hacker insurance, in the event a customer is successfully invaded by hackers. ICSA, remember these guys? These are the guys that rip off people's web pages and call it their own. In fact, they rip off people's names and call it their own. They call themselves NCSA for ages, until the real NCSA people got so upset at them that they forced them to change their name to ICSA. And if you go to their affiliated web pages, you'll see that they link to 2600's hacked web pages, except they block out the 2600 part and put their little logo in its place. And they've done this to other sites as well. Well, anyway, these are the people that are offering computer hacker insurance because they have such high moral ground. They're now offering, as part of their True Secure service, insurance against hacker attacks. ICSA will pay up to $250,000 if a customer's network is hacked into after it has followed the True Secure criteria, whatever that might be. This is the first hacker-related insurance, said Peter Tibet. That's an unfortunate name for him to have. President of the ICSA. I mean, it's more unfortunate for Tibetans, I think. Based in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. It puts our money where our mouth is. ICSA sells its True Secure service for, get this, $40,000 a year. So that's the catch. If you get hacked, you can only get the insurance if you've already paid them $40,000. Yeah, I see where this is going. The service, which it has been offering for several years, for some reason they've just been reported now, is a series of steps. Oh, the service. Okay, the insurance is new. I get it. It's a series of steps, methods, and procedures that an ICSA client must adhere to. Some steps are simple, such as having the server inside a locked room. Other steps are more complicated, such as the requirement to have a secure firewall around an internal network. It's pretty complicated. But the ICSA does not sell products. Instead, it recommends a whole range of software that it has approved as secure and meets its standards through open meetings and debates with all its members, many of whom develop security products. Then ICSA tests the client's security by using typical hacker methods through its 100 or so employees, none of whom are reformed hackers, not a one. ICSA believes, along with executives at IBM, that there is no such thing as a reformed hacker. We spray them with hacker tools and see where their vulnerabilities are, Tibet said, referring to many of the widely used hacker programs that are available over the internet or shared among hackers. The average site took about 2 weeks to get to the place where they meet all our requirements. After ICSA completes a six-step process to test and improve a company's security, the customer is deemed secure and will then receive insurance. Tibet likens the ICSA to the Center for Disease Control because it tracks all hacker attack. I guess that makes us a disease, right? Yeah. Okay. Tracks all hacker attacks and tests every hacker tool and virus its computers can find. The ICSA also is known for its Emergency Response Center, which tracks the fallout from known computer viruses and helps companies in a crisis. Oh yeah, it's what makes the whole computing industry so much fun. This is Off the Hook. Manuel Goldstein here with you until 9 o'clock, and today we have a special guest with us. Again, I'll have to figure out what microphone you're at, but Terzian has ventured all the way into New York City with a story that many of you, I think, should take very seriously because it involves Bell Atlantic, it involves ISDN, and it could very easily involve the future. It's some of the things we've been warning you about for a couple of years now, ever since Bell Atlantic started to move into the New York area, and ever since we started playing around with ISDN. As many of you know, 9X and now Bell Atlantic charges a ridiculous amount for data connections on ISDN lines, a penny a minute per channel. So if you have a two-channel line, you want to connect at 128K. This is what they don't tell you in the commercials. You have to pay a penny a minute times two because it's two channels. Now, if you're connected 24/7 every day of the week, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, that's added up. It's a lot of money, several thousand dollars a month. You can easily get around this by simply doing what is known as data over voice, which is what we've been recommending for years. It's nothing illegal about it, despite what some people might fear because of the way corporate America works. It's using the technology the way it was intended to be used. However, you can only achieve 56K per channel, and that means a total bandwidth of 112K if you use two channels, but no penny per minute surcharge. That's the important thing. So bills of several thousand dollars can be reduced to under $100 very easily just by using this technique. Terzian, you have a horror story that occurred to you as you were doing just this.
Right. Back in 1996, starting in June, I first acquired my ISDN service. I wanted, like everyone else, I wanted to go, and not wait for these websites to come down really slow. I also wanted to set up my own internal network, and back then, over 28.8, 33.6, that was impossible. Mm-hmm. I mean, telnet connections coming out from that would be horrendously slow. So I decided I'm going to go with Bell Atlantic's ISDN service. I already made arrangements with my upstream provider to do data over voice, and they had the Ascend products that would do that, and everything was happy, and I ordered my $1,000 Ascend Pipeline 50 back then, and already put myself in debt with that, so I thought everything was going to be great, and I set up my plain old ISDN service with Bell Atlantic, which was two B channels and a D channel, just as anyone would get nowadays, And I was off. I set it all up. And my first bill came in, and it was kind of weird. I was paying, I believe, something in the area of $50 per month for just the plain old ISDN service. That's no per-minute charges. That was just the flat rate that you can get ISDN for. Then they tack the per-minute charges on after that. When I forgot my first bill, it was like $79. And I called them up, and I said, why is my bill $79 when it's 50 cents and I was doing voice calls? And they said, we've been having trouble with our AMA billing system. Mm-hmm. It's just going crazy. We don't know exactly what it is. We'll fix it.
What did you expect your bill to be?
$50.
About 50.
Exactly.
So,
you know,
$29 too much.
Yeah, yeah.
That's something to complain about. I complain about it too.
Right. I mean, I watch the bills. I know how they mess up T1 lines and freight relay and things like that. So I called them up. They said, fine. They wiped it off the bill. The next month came in. I believe it was July. And it was $129.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I said, this isn't good. This isn't a very good trend.
No.
So I called them back up again. I said, hey, guess what? You messed up again. And the woman was very nice. She said, okay, we'll fix that. It's our billing system. Our AMA billing system's broken. We don't know exactly what's wrong, but we'll wipe it off. I thought, hey, this is great. So I got a bill. I got bills like that up till September 1996 when I received a bill for $1,400. At this point, I knew something was really, really wrong. So I called them up, and this time they weren't so flexible on the $1,350 difference. They said, no, I'm sorry, you're
$1,350.
$1,350 mistake was what I called it. And they swore up and down it was not a mistake. They found out what it was, that I was making data calls.
Now, wait a minute. How would they know what kind of calls you were making, whether they were, you know, voice calls, data calls, music calls, whatever kind of calls. How did they know?
Well, that was my question to them. I said, how do you know what kind of calls I'm making? Well, at that point, they kind of panicked and transferred me way up the line to some really interesting engineers that needed to be paged and only called me 3 weeks later. When I got them on the phone, they said that their AMA billing system was in some sort of test mode and was detecting Motorola BitSurfer codes coming across my line, and it was triggering their AMA billing system into data mode.
They not only were able to tell that you were making data calls, they knew what kind of data call, what kind of hardware you had?
Well, they never said that they saw Motorola BitSurfer on mine because I didn't have a Motorola BitSurfer, but they said, we've heard of this happening with the Motorola BitSurfer, and that was pretty specific for someone just to say, you know, with Motorola products or Ascend products, they said the Motorola BitSurfer with this init string will make it happen. So I said, well, that's nice, but I'm not using Motorola.
Huh.
So, again, they just claimed that their AMA billing system was broken, and that's how they found out that, or thought they found out that I was doing data calls.
So now you have this $1,350 bill, and they're accusing you of making data calls, which you are doing. You're making data calls, but you're using data over voice, which is, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Did you tell them this, or did you just try to not to?
I tried not to get them confused.
Okay.
Bells confuse very easily, and all they'll do is stick their head in the sand and shake their feet, because they're not up on technology as much as you would think. With long conversations with the local provisioning manager for ISDN, they were just trained 6 months ago on how to handle ISDN for special services. So I had ISDN for 2 years before that special services was trained on how to use it. So that tells you where they're at. But basically they told me, and I said, no, I've been making voice calls, and I've got it logged on my end, and I've got it logged on my upstream connections end. And they said, oh, no. And they would shuffle papers and go run to some engineer, and it would be another 2 months until I got a call.
Mm-hmm.
So during one of those two-month stints when I didn't hear from anybody, I decided to give the Public Utilities Commission a call. They're the government regulating body for Bell Atlantic, kind of like Bell Atlantic's big brother, if you may.
Right. The equivalent of our PSC in New York.
Right, right. I called them just to ask them some questions, not do anything formal. I called them up and I said, hey, Bell Atlantic's doing this to me. Can they do this? You know, can they? Is there a distinction between in your tariff between circuit switch voice and circuit switch data calls? And the operator had no idea what I was talking about.
Of course not. No, they have no idea. They never know.
Right. So they asked me for my name and whatever, and I thought that was the end of it. So I was talking to some of the engineers over there, and they were trying to get to see if they were going to give me a credit or not. We were going back and forth. According to the tariff that was in effect at that time, pre-August, the number 1, section 21F, ordinal sheet 7, section C, paragraph 1, subsection C. Residential budget or standard local usage option charges apply to circuit switch voice usage, meaning the non-tariffed charges applied to circuit switch voice usage, which is what I was using. And that was my question.
It means you were right.
Right. In other words, my circuit switch voice calls should have been billed under the prevailing flat rate usage, not at 1 or 2 cents per minute per B channel as I was actually billed.
Mm-hmm.
It came out, we did the math. They just basically flat billed me for the whole month. I don't even think they calculated anything. Someone took a rough estimate and said, charge him this.
Really?
Yeah. So the only time I was informed that they were listening to my lines is, we'll just say Mr. A and Mr. J from Bell Atlantic asked to make some tests on my ISDN line to check the operation of their AMA billing system. They're asking me to test their billing system. I mean, do you think there's something wrong with that? Me. I mean, go ahead, make your thing work so we can look and see what it does.
Uh-huh.
I said, okay, fine, I'll let you test. And they tested it, and they told me that their AMA billing system had a problem. They suspected it had a problem. But they never provided me with the results from that test. Never got a call back, never said, you were right, it's broken, or yes, it's broken. I never got a single call back. So in late September or early October, I made another call to the PUC, and I made a formal complaint. And I said, you know, this is bad. They're doing bad things to me. Help me.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally got transferred to somebody who actually took my complaint and actually wrote down what I said. The first complaint actually got filed as I was disputing that they could charge me.
Ah, one of those. Okay.
Yes. So the complaint actually came back to me after I submitted the second complaint and said, yes, they're allowed to charge you. Like, thank you. That was not what I wanted to know. But so I made a second complaint with the correct data in it. And I didn't appeal the first decision because the first decision was made on the wrong appeal. So once I made the second decision, I didn't hear anything again. This is going on for months,
mm-hmm.
Emmanuel. And as this is going on, I'm getting calls at my house saying, this is XYZ Credit Agency. You owe Bell Atlantic $1,400. It's being forwarded to ABC at Credit Agency.
Wow.
And it's going. I'm saying, please stop this. It's in dispute. It's in dispute. Bell Atlantic's credit people did not stop it. I stopped it at a person who bought the debt for 1 cent on the dollar. I said to him, please stop this debt. He said, that's fine. He said, I've got, what's 1 cent? He's got $14 on this debt now. So he said he'd stop it.
Maybe you could explain to us how this works when you go into arrears like this on your credit. How do people buy the debt?
Well, what happens is Bell Atlantic will hold your debt for a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
When they feel you're a deadbeat or physically dead,
okay.
They'll sell the debt off to someone else. Now, there are companies out there who will buy debts for 50 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, if you've got a $1,400 debt with Bell Atlantic, they want rid of it. They've already written it off as a loss. So they're going to try to reap some revenue. So they'll sell it off for $700, and another company will buy it for $700. Then they'll try to suck it out of you. And if they can't get it out of you, they'll sell it for 25 cents, and it rolls down the line. So somewhere, your debt's going to end up being, you know, 1/100th of it, what it was.
What I understand is that this last guy that got it for a penny, I mean, he's getting how much? $14 for your $1,400
debt? Right.
What's in it for him? He has to work just as hard to get you to pay $1,400 so he can get 14 bucks.
Right.
That's kind of weird.
What it is he buys the debt for $14.
Oh, he only paid $14.
Right. He pays $14.
Okay.
But if I pay the $1,400, he gets all
$1,400. I see.
But the chances are, by the time the debt gets to him, he's never going to see that money.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a long discussion, and he says he's the deadbeat guy. He gets people who are dead, who uh-huh. will never see the money.
Right.
But he every now and then he will get a person like me that does have the money and will pay it. They just had to put it off for a while.
Right.
So if you're getting more than one person calling you for your debt, and they're different companies, basically you can deal with them and say, well, I don't have the whole $800, but I've got $300 here. Would you like that?
Uh-huh.
And for the most part, if your debt's gone long enough, they'll take $300, they'll take $200, some of them even take $30. So don't let anybody push you around on a debt. Because
and then when that happens, your credit miraculously gets cleared up.
Well, it doesn't get cleared up, but that debt stops.
Okay.
It did, you know, your credit shows where it went to.
Mm-hmm.
It won't go any farther. If you pay someone's debt, then it won't go any farther.
I see. So let's get back to you.
Okay.
So you have this guy that paid $14 for your debt, and he agrees to cut it off.
Right. He agrees to put a hold on it. I said, this is in dispute. Do not move this any farther. And he said, I really can't move it any farther. Yeah, no one's going to pay half a cent on this debt and buy it for me for $7. So I said, fine. Thank you very much. And I moved on. And on January 27th, the head of the ISDN Special Services Department, we'll just say Mr. L, sent a letter to my business associate who was attempting to straighten out the problem with me, informing him that Bell Atlantic would not issue me a credit. No reason why. No mention of the tests. Nothing about the AMA billing system. And it appeared to be, what had happened was, we calculated the dates. That was the date that the second PUC complaint hit home. So basically what it was I went to Big Brother and I said, Bell Atlantic's abusing me. Please make them stop. Well, when that happens, the PUC will send a letter not to some small department. They send it right to the executive department of Bell Atlantic, and, it rolls downhill. Well, it obviously got to somebody who was dealing with my case, and they said, we're not spending any more time on this guy. He doesn't have a case. He won't go up against us. He's paying it. And they sent me a letter saying, you're paying it. That was it.
So really, that's where hardball started to be played.
Right.
Okay.
Right. At that point, I acquired a lawyer who had PUC experience, who was also a PUC employee beforehand, and once that was in, then we started formulating a game plan and playing a little bit of hardball with Bell Atlantic. It was very hard to get a hold of Bell Atlantic after that decision. It was kind of like, we're done with you. It's kind of like,
they weren't picking up the phones anymore.
Right. Almost like when your parents, if your parents ever said, I'm disappointed in you, I'm not talking to you anymore. Or or maybe when kids say, I'm not going to talk to you ever again, I hate you.
Right.
Well, basically, that's what Bell Atlantic told me in more or less words, I hate you. We're not talking to you anymore. So,
you hate it when big corporations do that.
Right. So they stomped their feet and held their breath as we, slung some things their way. And then I finally got a call saying that, okay, we would like to meet with, your legal counsel and my legal counsel. And we did, all 12 of their lawyers and
12 of their lawyers, huh?
Yeah.
With the briefcases, like Mr. Burns or something.
Yes.
That's something.
And
what do you think made them finally do this?
They realized that I was serious.
Okay. Were you going to the media at all?
Well, that was one of the things. I said, now I'm angry. I said, now I'm going to go to the media. Mm-hmm. And, we've got you legally. You've said some things in some letters and on the phone that were just not right. Some of the accusations you're saying would lead us to believe that you were listening to the phone line. You can't do that. And we're going to bust this wide open if something doesn't get done right now. And basically, we put our foot down. And that's what happened.
Now, what was happening with regards to your ISDN connections? You obviously weren't able to make any phone calls during that period, were you?
Well, that's true. They did cut off my ISDN service. They cut it off right after the testing. They left it on for me long enough so they could grab my packets and figure out what kind of strings my adapter was sending through so they could plug it into their billing system to let them know that it's doing data over voice.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, they did yank my ISDN connection, so I had no net connection. I did buy a modem and connect up, but as far as my site was just down.
That's something. So you meet with their attorneys.
Right. And we had a long discussion, and a settlement was made. And I'm very happy with that settlement.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I did have to sign some paper gagging me from speaking about that settlement. And I will respect that because I did sign the piece of paper. But I will tell you that it was a very happy settlement on our end.
Okay.
And I won't be hearing from them on that issue anymore.
Well, now what I'm concerned about, though, is how many of the people are out there that this has happened to that haven't done what you've done, that have just sort of taken it and are either paying a huge amount of money to Bell Atlantic every month or have simply stopped using, the phone lines to connect. in that manner.
Right, right. What I would say to them is don't take any abuse from Bell Atlantic or Ninex or any Bell. There's actually a website out there if you want to feel better. It's www.soothebells.com.
Ooh. We had Ninexsucks.com. This one sounds good, too.
Yeah, it actually has information on these profiteering gluttons, as has been said before by the mentor, what they're doing is wrong, and some of it's a state-by-state individual case and how to proceed with acting on this. But if you have a PUC in your state or in your country, some sort of regulatory body that regulates the phone companies, do not hesitate to call these people. They will talk to you. And if you've got a discrepancy on your bill and a Bell Atlantic operator is telling you you're wrong and you know you're right, mm-hmm. or even if you don't know you're right, mm-hmm. talk to the PUC. They're the ones who draw up the tariffs.
And their number is usually right in the front of your phone book.
Right, right. So, one more thing about this case. When you sign up for ISDN now, unfortunately, due to my case, they've changed the tariff. They went back in August of, I believe, 97, and they changed the tariff to, doesn't matter what kind of call you establish, either data over voice, or either a voice switch call or a data switch call, you will be charged 2 cents per minute per B channel on peak time, and 1 cent per minute per B channel off peak time. And that's in Pennsylvania. I don't know what it is here in Illinois.
That's not in New York, I can tell you that right now. And I don't think something like that would ever be allowed to happen in New York.
Well, it's happening in Pennsylvania.
So you're saying in Pennsylvania right now?
Right now.
Even if you make a data over voice call,
yes.
you're being charged a penny a minute per B channel.
That is correct. On residential ISDN.
That's because of you.
I don't know if I want to take all the blame. I believe the tariff was in a working, but I do believe that I had something to do with getting it out the door.
I don't see how they could get away with that, and that's something I think people need to fight hard.
Right. Well, I don't see how they can get away with most of their stuff, and I think people just don't know. I don't think enough people have looked into ISDN. ISDN is a great service. Right now, if you don't have access to cable, cable type modems or any DSL technologies, ISDN is the next best thing. Mm-hmm. Now, Bell Atlantic does have package prices. You can get unlimited ISDN, residential unlimited mm-hmm. ISDN for $329 a month. I believe that's the price for last time I checked. So you can buy blocks of time, and they have a little website that shows you how much time do you use. Well, then this is the plan you need. They're all overpriced. They're so expensive. I can give you one hint, and that's look into small business ISDN. There is a trick.
Okay. All right. Well, for our Pennsylvania listeners, I'd like to hear what kind of solutions you might come up with. Also, people in other parts of the country, since we have listeners all over the place. Terzian, you can be reached at our 2600 site, right?
That's correct.
If people have stories they want to share with you?
That's correct, and I'll...
How do you spell your name?
It's T-E-R-S-I-A-N, kind of like Persian, but with a T.
At 2600.com. And, I think the best way to deal with this is to just sort of share the stories. Our number here is 212-209-2900, if I'm not mistaken, because it's a new phone number. And people, hopefully all over the place, will be calling us and... telling stories, sharing stories, having opinions on this tale of woe by Terzian has come here from Pennsylvania and probably being targeted by Bell Atlantic right now for some new harassment campaign.
Of course.
Now, you have to pay the penny a minute now?
Actually, I've done the small business trick.
Okay.
I can't explain exactly what that is for fear that they'll clap down on that too and I won't have any ISDN service, but if you're a smart person, you'll read into their small business ISDN and figure out what's going on there. It's like $49 a month for small business ISDN.
Okay.
And the PUC tariff does not affect that plan.
Okay. Well, we'll see how that varies from state to state. 212-209-2900, and hopefully we'll get a report from our internet people seeing how the connections are doing over there. Let's see how the phones are working this week. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello?
Yes, how you doing?
Oh, hi. Hold on for a minute, Emmanuel. Hold on. I'm calling from L.A. Hold on.
He's calling from L.A.
Hold on.
The rebel on the phone there. Sounds like he's calling a whole lot of different times.
Hold on.
How come we hear so many different rings? Is this you on every single line?
Eric?
Is this you on every single line?
Oh God! Hold on, I got.
Let me just ask you one question. Are you listening to the show?
Yes, I am on the net. Hold on.
All right. That was a very important answer you just gave.
Hold on.
It determined your future.
Hold on.
How many times are you calling? He hung himself up this time. Friends, for the first time in history, I have not hung up on Rebel. He has hung up on me. There's your proof. And Rebel in Los Angeles, hi, how you doing? Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh.
It's a tone. No, we don't want that. Let's get a... Look at this. He was taking up all the phone lines. Good evening. You're on the phone. I mean, you're on the air. Okay, that one's gone. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, it's me again. Live from L.A.
What kind of a phone system are you using out there in L.A. if you can call us 20 times? Where are you running off to? Come back to the phone, all right? This is important.
I got some things to tell you.
Yeah, well, tell them fast because we're running out of time.
I'm in L.A., and I'd like to tell you...
The phone lines are now open, people. 212-209-2900. The phone lines are Rebel-free, so, Rebel, please make it quick.
All right, I'll make it quick. I drove out here from New York City, and I noticed when I was driving out... By the way, I'm in Los Angeles. I'm sitting on the net. I'm in North Hollywood, California now.
Oh, the big break finally came through, huh?
And now, how does the AT&T long-distance call completion work? You know, when I dial 10288, one in area code 555-1212, it says AT&T could complete the call if you press 1. I press the 1,
uh-huh.
And then it after the number, the directory system says the number.
It connects you.
It plays it. It connects it, but how does it know when it's saying the number?
How does it know when it's what?
When it's after it says the number. In other words, if I talk to the operator for a while,
mm-hmm.
then it'll wait. But when the operator gives the number, it'll complete it. How does it know when the operator gives the
number?
Well,
I imagine you're setting some sort of a flag in the call setup that says when this number is obtained, connect the caller to this number directly.
And do you know that L.A. has one ESSs and all...
Oh, yes, I know. When I'm talking to people in L.A., lots of times you hear this ka-chunk when they get a call
and
waiting.
They have the old directory assistants.
What's the old directory system?
The one that does not connect you with the number. The one that goes, can I have the... What number are you calling? And also...
And they tell you the number in words? I mean, they don't, like, play
the
computer?
Yeah, they say the words.
Wow.
And...
It's worth going out to L.A. just to experience that, isn't it?
When you come to L.A., try it. When I was in Montana,
uh-huh.
I dial 0, and it says, local telephone company. I say, what phone company is this? It's not USS. The operator says, it's your local telephone company.
They don't know the name of their own company?
And also, when I was in Montana, I stayed at a motel.
Uh-huh.
I dialed 9, the operator at AT&T. She asked me my room number. I told him another room number.
Oh, no, you didn't.
And another time I told her a room that doesn't even exist.
You know, you're just the height of rebellion. That's what you are. That's your name.
They call me Rebel.
That's exactly it.
And
you know, in parts of L.A., though, you don't even have a regular RBOC. You have GTE, you know.
Yeah, I know. I got to go through GTE. I've passed a lot of GTE land.
People move out of GTE neighborhoods just so that they don't have to deal with those people.
Now, banks still charge you for an ATM. In other words, I came down from Seattle. I needed money. I was at the airport. I needed money. They charge you $2.
Uh-huh. Well, they do that around here, too, you know.
Well, I know that, but I'm saying they get tourists. It's a trap for tourists because
uh-huh.
tourists don't know where they are and where the banks are that they'll charge you. So, you know, they get stuck paying these fees. Just as I noticed that traveling across the country.
All right. So anything else on the Rebel Summer Tour 98 that you want to tell us about?
Summer Tour 98. I have a guest for you.
You have a guest?
Tell
them
who you are.
Uh-oh.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm Richie's guest.
You're his guest.
Yes.
And you've just given out his name, too.
Oh, his name is Rebel.
All right, well...
He's been doing this since he's about 10 years old.
Uh-huh, 10 years old, huh?
Yep.
Wow, that's...
It's unbelievable.
That is something. I have to agree with you there. Unbelievable,
right?
Is definitely
is
a word.
Is he the greatest?
Unbelievable. Let's stick with that.
Oh, okay. Wait, I'll let you talk to somebody else.
Okay, thank you.
I got nothing better to do. Hello.
Yeah, we do have something better to do, actually.
Let me
we
ask
have
you
to
a question.
Go on to another phone call.
What else do you guys do? Just talk about telephones?
That's all we do all the time. We're just completely obsessed. But I want to thank all the people out there in L.A. for listening and for calling us. And stay safe, whatever you wind up doing. All right, 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the phone. Oh, boy, what's going on with these phones?
They were all Richie.
You know, I don't know if it's a... It might be a phone problem that we're having here.
Yeah.
Ah, we have a human. Okay. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, evening. A couple of weeks ago, I asked you guys about solarpoint.com.
Did you ever check it out?
What was it again?
Solarpoint.com.
What was it you asked?
Okay, if you were aware of it. Because what it is a service whereby you could access your voicemail using your cellular phone.
Uh-huh.
The way it works is this, nice and short. Someone is trying to reach you while you're in transit. You will get a beep on your cell phone.
Okay.
You could then access your voicemail and monitor the call. If you want to speak to the person, you could pull the call from your voicemail. If you if they have information that you can't say, like, take down right away,
uh-huh.
You could then switch them back into your voicemail where uh-huh. they could leave the information. However, if you do not want to speak to the person on voicemail, you just press another button, and they wouldn't even know you were monitoring the call.
Wow. That's and what was the site again?
Solopoint.com.
Uh-huh. And how do you spell that?
S-O-L-O. P-O-I-N-T.
Okay. Well, I'm sure a lot of us will be interested in that. I do know that a lot of the PCS companies have similar types of services with their voicemail, where you're able to make phone calls and then go back into voicemail after you make the phone calls and things like that. I think you'll see more sophisticated versions of that.
Yeah. They have some other good features, too, but I wouldn't get into that.
Uh-huh.
Peace.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Yeah, you know, I was playing around with PCS phones. I went to Canada this past week. And I was with a friend. We both had the same Sprint PCS service. Different phones, the same service. And guess what? His phone was roaming. My phone was not. My phone was speaking to the United States. His phone was speaking to Canada. They were right next to each other, and they were doing two totally different things. So it's kind of weird what's going on with some of the services. It's unpredictable. I don't quite know what it was that was going on there, but it's all part of the future technology. All right, let's see if anybody has anything to say to Terzine, who has given us quite a tale of horrors, something that I think we should all be concerned with. All right, let's see if we can get a phone call here. Okay, I think all these these lines down here are bad. Is that someone there?
Yes, hello.
How you doing?
Hi. I've been listening to your show. I love it.
Thank you.
I've got a couple of questions regarding everything I've heard this evening.
Okay.
I just ordered an ISDN line, and I actually have... I live in Yonkers, New York. I have no intention of actually using an ISDN modem. I'm just doing it to get a cleaner line. Now, my question is, can I run into the same problems using a 56K modem on an ISDN line?
Yeah. What will happen is you'll connect the 56K modem into right. the POTS port in the back of
right.
the whatever TA or NT1 that you're going to buy the ISDN adapter.
Right.
And then you're going to go across. You're probably going to go across one of the B channels of your. Depending on the NT1, but I've heard both ways from engineering departments at different ISPs that people were getting billed because they were using a specific terminal adapter to route the call across a B channel, and then I've heard other people just plugging in and not getting billed. So I can't give you a definitive answer,
right?
But okay. Put it this way, if you're making a call with an ISDN line
right.
on a B channel, you will be billed if you have the residential service. You will be billed per minute.
Well, that's if you're in Pennsylvania.
If you're in Pennsylvania.
In New York, we have different billing methods.
Right. I'm not sure what the billing is in New York.
It is 1 cent. I did specifically ask the salesperson if I am not using... I told them that I've got a couple of computers which will be online. Only one will be ISDN and one will not. They asked me for all specifics on the ISDN modem that I will have. I gave them information, which is false. I told them it will be a U.S. Robotics Sportster ISDN, but it will, in fact, be a 56K Sportster. And I made sure to find out from him, if I'm using the 56K and I'm not using the ISDN, will they be charging me by the minute? And they actually, the salesman said no, which, I mean, I don't know that I can really believe, but... He said, no, as long as I'm not using the ISDN, I will not be charged by the minute.
Well, what I just have to, you know, again, I don't know the specifics of it. It would
right.
have to, you know, I would have to check out exactly what you're using as far as an NT1 and your terminal adapter
okay.
and as far as the way Bell has your ISDN set up. Mm-hmm. But what I can tell you to do is check your bill when it comes in.
Right.
Make sure it's the flat rate that they've promised you per month. If it's
okay.
1 cent above it,
right.
call them.
Right.
Otherwise, it may go from 1 cent to $1,000 very shortly.
Yes, so I heard. Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much.
You know, I think it's important not to believe what the salespeople tell you, because lots of times they say things like that, you know, and it's not true. It has no basis in reality. Thing is, you know, you have to do a little bit of research here. Parts of New York, we have untimed service where you make a phone call, as someone's doing to me right now, and basically you pay for the phone call, but you don't pay for the minutes. So it's possible to make a connection over ISDN and stay connected and just pay for that initial phone call, which is about 10 cents. All right. And if you do it over voice, the voice channel, data over voice, then you do not pay that silly penny a minute surcharge, at least not in New York. Other states, they might be trying to change things. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think that maybe we're sort of complaining a little too much, that we're trying to get something for nothing?
No, because I'd like to break down the actual charges, what it actually costs Bell Atlantic to set up this service. It runs over copper, and it runs over conditioned lines. Now, it is distance sensitive. So if you're, I think it's 18,000 feet or more from your local CO, you're not going to be able to get ISDN due to the noise on the line. But it runs over normal copper. They have to do some things. You have to do a few things at the switch. But I don't see, if I want to stay connected 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I don't see a reoccurring $1,400 charge for Bell Atlantic. I'm sorry. There is nothing there like that. That is all profit margin, and that's why they love ISDN so much.
And keep in mind, this is not including the cost that you would pay to your internet service provider.
Oh, yeah, this is in addition. This is your transport cost. Mm-hmm. This isn't your access cost.
Right. It's incredibly high. It's incredibly high. And
it'll be interesting to see how they handle the DSL technologies and see how they build that.
I'm very worried about that. They're going to mess that one up too. You know, ISDN really has a lot of potential, but if they price it, it's the OmniPoint syndrome. It's, you price something out of reach, people aren't going to get it. They're going to go to the competition. And it may not be as good a service, but, you know, they're not going to want to pay a huge amount of money for something.
Right.
So that's something that I think we need to keep an eye on. Has there been any kind of testing of other companies, other local companies?
Well, unfortunately, in my area, it's Bell or Bell. There is some other local CLECs opening up, but they're mainly interested in high speed now. They want to set up their fiber loops and get everything. They're basically their infrastructure set up with businesses. We'll run you 2T3s in here. For your huge building, if you let us run your fiber, let us run our fiber loop through here.
For the average listener, that's kind of out of reach.
We'll give you all your phone lines for free, your transport for free, if you let us set up our local fiber network in your building.
Right.
And a lot of them are doing that. And there are some others offering ISDN, but again, they're staying competitive with Bell. They figure, well, some idiots are buying it. Let's keep charging the idiots.
How about cable modems? Any luck with those?
Cable modems have come a great stretch. The deployment at home and Time Warner's Roadrunner service is widespread and it's getting bigger. I've seen cable modems in action. I actually work with them at my job, and the telco return modems work beautifully with 256 guaranteed and bursting speeds up to T1 with a 56K return. It's marvelous, but again, it's company sensitive. You got to have a company in your area that's willing to support the cable modems, and
plus, I hear there's a problem with censorship of lots of things.
Well, that is up to the ISP. Now, I can't speak for At Home or Roadrunner, but our service, we don't block anything. We have quite a few hundred cable modems.
Thursday, I want to thank you very much for coming in today and telling us all this information. It's something I think hopefully we'll take as a warning and keep a bit more alert, talk to our public service commissions and talk to the media, and hopefully talk to you as well. Terzian at 2600.com. If you want to send something to the radio show itself, OTH for Off the Hook at 2600.com. And we'll see you again next week, same time, same place. Good night. The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall.
something familiar.
The Laugh Meter is starting to register, and we haven't begun yet, but the monthly WBAI Comedy Night at Stand Up New York should be a beaut on Sunday night, June 28th. Because some of the funniest and most politically hip people on this planet will be gathered in one spot at one time. And they include Professor Irwin Corey, Joy Behar, Jim David, and Scott Blakeman. Don't be left out of the laughter. Call early and make your reservations for WBAI's Comedy Night, Sunday, June 28th. The mayhem commences at 6 p.m. and Stand Up New York is at 236 West 78th Street. It's $15 a person and supports listener-sponsored WBAI. The number for reservations is area code 212-575-0263. See you on Sunday, the 28th, at Stand Up New York. One last time, the number for reservations is 575-0263.
Something expensive, something offensive.